my symphony of you.
A week ago, Miami was bracing for this. The Electronic Dance Music Festival, Ultra. We're back in the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening to this Pledge Edition. The pledge lines remain open, 866-247-9576 or WLRN.org. The thumping bass could only have meant Ultra was in town last weekend and its thousands of fans. The weekend music festival held in Bayfront Park in Miami. Now, past years, it's earned a reputation for arrests and drug use. But this year, Ultra was relatively quiet. Now, certainly not the music. That still had plenty of bass rolling through downtown Miami. But the crowd itself generally behaved. On this special Pledge Edition, Chuck Rabin, crimes reporter for the Miami Herald, still with us from our studios in Doral. Chuck, I say relatively behaved because we got to compare it to years past. And in years past, this crowd was pretty behaved, wasn't it?
It hasn't been terrible, but maturity is slowly creeping into everything, and everybody's happier for it.
Time moves in one direction and one speed, doesn't it,
Chuck? That's true.
Yeah. Some of us are getting a little grayer and a little older. Ultra tries to perhaps stay the youthful dance festival that it is. 33 arrests this year during Ultra. How does that compare?
That's down 50% or so from a year ago and down even more than that from previous years.
So pretty significant drop, right? Yeah.
Very significant.
And what kinds of arrests are we talking about here?
Half were felonies, the other half, you know, misdemeanors.
Okay.
Most of the felonies were for drug possession.
All right. And can folks, police, attribute this drop in illicit activity or at least alleged illicit activity?
There are a whole bunch of new parameters that they set up that have been modified over the years. They raised the age of entrance to 18. They have amnesty baskets at the entrance now where you can throw bottles and drugs into without getting arrested. They have roving teams of graduate students to help anyone who needs any kind of help. Mm. And the expense is so through the roof that not everybody can afford
to do this. Well, I mean, tickets alone are, $500 or something like that?
For the weekend, $500. You can get deals at the Intercontinental for like $5,100 for a couple of nights.
That's there. A deal. Okay, I'll take your word for that, Chuck. But in all seriousness, the safety issues around Ultra came really to a head about 3 years ago when a security guard, a private security guard, was almost trampled to death by some gate crashers at a fence in the south corner of Bayfront Park. What's changed? It's instituted some of these rules. Has its relationship with law enforcement changed?
It's, you know, like everything else, it's not one specific thing. But this seems to be a combination of everything. I mean, they've reinforced the fencing. But they've also instituted all these rules.
Yeah.
The kids aren't allowed anymore. You know, you can drop off your drugs. The security guard, Erica Mack, that was a terrible incident. Mm-hmm. She was by a gate and a bunch of people outside tried to get in, jumped it. It came crashing down on her and she had some hemorrhaging and it was horrible.
Very serious injuries, yeah. And that led to a lot of questions about whether or not Ultra was wearing out its welcome. In Miami, have the changes that the festival has instituted over the past couple of years addressed that welcome, Matt?
It has, as far as the city is concerned. I believe the crowds are calmer. It brings a tremendous amount of money and visibility of the city around the world. It's a very special event that only happens in like 19 major cities. You're talking like Rio and. But a lot of the people who live in those apartments downtown aren't thrilled about it.
And there's more of those people, too, each and every year as the residential population of downtown and Brickell and Edgewater have continued to increase.
There is. But if Miami wants to be the world city that it says it is all the time, it's going to have concerts in its parks just like New York and San Francisco. And people are going to learn to deal with it.
You have to put up with the rattling windows for a weekend in March, I guess, right, Chuck?
Yeah. I mean, our parents probably weren't happy with what we were listening to either.
If it's too loud, you're too old. Chuck Rabin, the crimes reporter at the Miami Herald. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you, Tom.
We got to move from electronic dance music to dance. For more than a decade, Patricia Delgado has been a principal dancer with the Miami City Ballet. It's the company that she grew up with and in, having started there as a preteen. As a student, she studied at the ballet here during the school year and then in New York for summer programs, but she would always return to dance back home in Miami.
I'm really driven, but I like a supportive environment, and I don't
necessarily think I do my best in that competitive, edgy vibe. And I knew something different down here. I knew that there was like a real supportive family vibe. I'm just very grateful that this existed down here. If it hadn't, I don't know if I would have pursued it.
Well, pursue it she did. WLRN's editorial director Alicia Zuckerman spoke with Delgado as she's about to retire at the ripe old age of 34.
34,
is that right?
Yeah. Retire from the Miami City Ballet. She's not retiring from being a creative person and even potentially dancing.
Tell us about her.
She's really interesting, you know, and it's hard to talk about Patricia without also talking about her sister, Jeanette, who's 2 years younger. And one of the things I loved in the article in the Miami Herald about this departure was that the Delgado sisters were referred to as the soul of Miami City Ballet. And that's because they've been with the company for so long. They grew up in the company and the company grew up with them.
Yeah, it really has come up to national acclaim during their tenure there.
Yeah, I mean, it was started by Edward Villella, who was a New York City ballet dancer, extremely acclaimed ballet dancer, who had studied under Balanchine, George Balanchine, who was founder of New York City Ballet. And that's, by the way, why it's called Miami City Ballet. Of course, Miami is not called Miami City. That was a nod to Villella's roots. So it was going to be a good, strong company from the start. But what happened over the course of the years that the Delgado sisters were growing up and Patricia, who's now exiting, is that it started to do some things differently besides being a Balanchine company. Mm. George Balanchine, again, the choreographer who founded New York City Ballet.
Right.
And they were known, that's what they were known for many, many years. And then they started to sort of experiment a little with different choreography. First, it was very, very known choreographers who were kind of straddling the modern contemporary classical ballet world. And then now they're really doing a lot of work with living choreographers. Many of them are very young, in their like 30s and even 20s, and doing really interesting work around that.
And untested work sometimes in terms of audience appetite for it. And so How did the Delgado sisters figure into that movement toward the ability to acknowledge the roots, but also experiment in the art form?
Yeah, well, I can talk about Patricia in particular because I spoke with her just earlier this week after a rehearsal. And, you know, that love for classical ballet is so much a part of who she is, mm-hmm. having grown up in it. But she talked about the fact that the importance of the evolution of the company for her evolution as an artist and how satisfying that is for her and the other dancers to be able to dance different kinds of works within their art form. And that really keeps the company moving forward. And frankly, the audiences moving forward as well. I mean, that's a really important part of it, is to bring audiences who are, as you said, going to show up, not necessarily knowing what they're going to see or expecting something different. And I have to say, like, dancers are ballet dancers, for anybody who hasn't seen them. They are full on athletes.
Oh, yeah.
They are nothing
less
than athletes. Yeah. They are incredible to watch.
And that comes along with the injuries as
Exactly. In fact, Patricia has been sidelined. She was out last season except for one performance in New York, and she was hoping to come back this season. She was out again because of a series of injuries, her ankle in particular, and is coming back really just for these farewell performances.
I want to ask you about the farewell performances in a moment, but why is she retiring?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. She has been hurt. You know, she's been in pain. She's been dealing with these injuries. But besides that, I mentioned the contemporary choreographers. One of those is Justin Peck. He is her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. He is also resident choreographer for New York City Ballet, mm-hmm. and a dancer with New York City Ballet. She said they've had this really wonderful long-distance relationship for 4 years. But she said the disconnect or the imbalance between her personal life and her work life has been a little out of whack, and she feels like that's taking a toll. And so the combination of all of those factors is leading her to New York to try some different things and to be with Justin, her boyfriend.
Will a Delgado sister remain with the company, though?
That is the plan. Okay. Jeanette Delgado is taking a leave next season because she's actually going to spend the year in Spain with her fiancé. But she is slated to come back for the 2018-19 season.
The final performances, what do we know?
So the final performances are taking place tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, April 1st and 2nd at the Arscht Center, and then next weekend, April 8th and 9th at the Broward Center.
Saying goodbye to Patricia Delgado, principal dancer at the Miami City Ballet.
And also the video. There's a video of her, one of her last rehearsals at WLRN.org. Take a look.
Absolutely. If you don't think they're athletes, take a look at that video.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. Thanks so much, Alicia.
Thank you.
Finally on the roundup this week, April is tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Not only is it right around the corner, it is tomorrow. And again, this year, WLRN is partnering with the Oh Miami Poetry Festival during National Poetry Month, April. This year, we're asking you to write a poem about food. We call it an edible ode. Food, of course, all links us together. It connects us to where we are from and where we are.
Hi, my name is Allison Ifrigan, and I'm from Miami, Florida. The name of my edible ode is Ode to Spice. A realm without flavor is one none would savor. Mediterranean rosemary, mender of memory. The connoisseur's fantasy, an edible ethnicity. Tick-tocking time, please slay this cough of mine. Mouthwater gushing over herbs that I'm lusting.
Hi, my name is Corey Feiner, and I am recording this poem from Pompano Beach, Florida. The title of my edible ode is Ode to Tostones. Green plantain, my starchy, thick-skinned cousin. Potatoes can't hold a candle to you, my once-smashed, twice-fried tostones. My tachinos, my chatinos, my frito verdes, I dip your red mojo. I cannot stop.
If your creative juices aren't flowing and your tummy's not rumbling, you're just not listening, I guess. Here's the recipe today. Pick a food or a dish. You could praise it. You could curse it. Do it in verse. The serving size here, 40 words or fewer. Write the poem at WLRN.org/odes. Right there on the website, you can enter it at WLRN.org/odes. The deadline for edible odes. The spoilage date is April 18th. That'll do it for the special pledge edition of The Roundup. Thanks for listening. It is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is WLRN's editorial director. Our digital director is Teresa Frontado. Katie Lepre, our engagement producer. Our program director and pledge extraordinaire co-host here, Peter Mertz. Peter J., otherwise known as, and our technical supervisor today, Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening, and thanks for your financial support for public media in South Florida and WLRN.